and welcome to this week's edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you for listening to the program. It's been a few weeks since we've done a show. We're about 3.5 weeks into the NHL season, so definitely seemed like the right time to do another show here. Just a few housekeeping items as per usual. You can follow me and, by extension, the show at Adam_Summers on Twitter. If you have a question or a comment or anything you'd like me to talk about on the show, feel free to tweet me there, or if you are still a person who uses email, that seems like it's anymore a late 90s, early 2000s thing, but if you want to email the show, breakouthockey@radiostar.com is the somewhat oddball email address for the show. So that is that. The plan, as always, sometimes it ends up being met. Sometimes it doesn't, but the idea is for this to be a weekly 30-minute show talking about everything that's going on in the hockey world, not just the National Hockey League, but the hockey world in general. So that is the plan. Also of note, I will be on, probably by the time you listen to this, I have actually already been on another podcast as I record this on Monday evening. The Jewel Cast from the Jewels from the Crown LA Kings fan blog. I am on their show discussing similar things. I know that they wanted to have me on specifically to talk about the Blackhawks' start to the season. Speaking of oddball, it's been a bit strange. So we'll talk a lot about that on that show. We'll also get into that a little bit here, but definitely no shortage of things to talk about as far as the NHL is concerned. Before we get into some of the pretty big events going on internationally this month and going forward, but in the National Hockey League, certainly no shortage of things to talk about. When last we left on this show, it was the night before the NHL season started. I, like everybody else, gave my predictions. Some of those have worked out pretty well. Some of those haven't. Quite a few teams that were expected to do well have gotten off to not-so-fantastic starts. There have been some teams that were expected to do well that by and large, have done very well. And there's also some teams that nobody expected them to be where they are about 3.5 weeks into this season. So most people are negative, so I guess it's pretty easy to talk about the teams that just have not produced like many people expected. I guess you could kind of split the difference and talk about the Colorado Avalanche. I know I'm far from the only podcast to be talking about them, but as we talked about on last week's show, they are sort of the test case. I guess they're the litmus test. I feel it's so weird to say if you believe in analytics, if you believe in advanced stats. It's such a strange thing to say because it's not a believe in or not a believe in. It's do you are you a fan of going with things that are tangible, i.e. numbers, or are you a fan of going with your gut and the eye test, and which do you put more credence into it? I think it's pretty hard to argue with numbers, particularly with a large sample size. And as we talked about on last year's show, Colorado last season won the Central Division, have some great scorers, obviously, but did it largely through smoke and mirrors. And in hockey, smoke and mirrors is great goaltending, and in the case last year of Semyon Varlamov, unsustainably great goaltending, and also unsustainably high shooting percentage. That I think in a lot of ways, other than bad bounces, if you want to use that terminology, that's what, if you can quantify luck in hockey, I think that to a great degree is luck. And the Colorado Avalanche had it last year in spades. They won 20 some odd games, one goal games. It seemed like every one goal game they had in the regular season, they'd get that goal with a few minutes left. You know, the Patrick Waugh pulling the goalie with 5, 7, 8 minutes left, they'd do that and then win it in overtime, or at least get a point out of it. And most people that pay attention very closely to such things pointed out that pretty much every metric showed that they should not have done what they did last year, and it kind of caught up with them in the playoffs. And the idea was that combined with some puzzling off-season moves, mainly making a concerted effort to get slower and older at the expense of the speed and quickness that, you know, if they had a strength last year, it was clearly that, the quick strike offense that they had. And you had guys like Jerome McGinley, you had guys like Danny Briere, and it takes away from that game. You lose Paul Stastny via free agency to St. Louis, and I mean, what we've seen has not been overly surprising. As we mentioned on last week's show, Colorado had a very poor preseason, which, I mean, the preseason's the preseason. Not necessarily the greatest indicator, but then when you look at what's happened in this regular season through 13 games, 3-5-5, really only being propped up by the five overtime losses. I mean, they're if you're going straight by wins and losses, they're 3-10. They have 11 points, so they haven't lost touch with the teams in front of them, but they're, you know, 5 points out of the division lead, having played two more games than Nashville. And, you know, again, you look at, and I'll leave the really deep dive advanced stats to others that are much better at that than I am, obviously, but, I mean, you look at the not-so-advanced stats, goals for 31, goals against 38, not fantastic by any stretch of the imagination. And you look, there just aren't a whole lot of things that you're seeing with Colorado Avalanche, in their play that leads you to believe that it's going to be much different going on throughout the season. Again, maybe they get crazy hot, but it's kind of hard to see how they're going to just run that strong into the headwinds and make progress. So Colorado, I think, again, a lot of us had them out of the playoffs, and it clearly looks like in an ultra-competitive Central Division that, with the emergence of, as I just mentioned, the Nashville Predators, it's only going to be a tougher and tougher run to try to get into the playoffs via the Central Division. Nashville is a team that I don't know that we talked about them a whole lot last week, but when you look at their roster, I mean, they were one of the biggest wild cards going into the season, in that you added a lot of guys that were sort of reclamation projects. You added Mike Ribeiro, who's been a point producer throughout his career, but had some pretty serious off-ice issues that, you know, they clearly torpedoed his opportunity to have a good, a typically good season last year in Arizona, and they couldn't get rid of him quickly enough. He's had a great start to the season, 9 points through 11 games, 3 goals and 6 assists. Shooting percentage, it's a little bit higher than you'd expect to be able to continue, but still, he's had a very nice start to the season. James Neal, after a rough first 3 or 4 games, now 7 goals, 2 assists in 11 games, 40 shots on goal, another hallmark of a guy like a James Neal or a Patrick Sharp or an Alex Ovechkin, that they've got a great shot, they've got a great release, but their scoring also comes from the volume of shots that they're putting on the net, and he clearly has gotten back into that mold. I mean, Shea Weber. Olli Jokinen hasn't exactly had the most fantastic start to the season. Goose eggs on the stat line, but by and large, the guys that they've brought in have performed either equal to or above what you would have expected. And then you look at guys, you know, Ryan Ellis. They've been waiting and waiting and waiting for Ryan Ellis to take that step forward and be a legitimate, offensive NHL defenseman. He seems to have taken that step forward. Craig Smith, who every year you wonder, is it going to be the year that he breaks through? He's had a nice start. Just you go down the line. I mean, even Philip Forsberg's got to be the, I won't say surprise, because we've all known how talented he was coming into the league, but when Washington gave up on him and made that horrendous trade of Martin Irett and Martin Irett's $4.4 million salary to Nashville for Philip Forsberg, it turned on a lot of red flags, a lot of red lights, and that's what Philip Forsberg's been doing, whether it be goals or assists. He's a point-per-game guy right now, 3 goals, 8 assists through the first 11 games. You look at that team, and obviously Pekka has been fantastic. 1.88 goals against through 10 starts, 931 save percentage. Those are all the things that you'd expect a healthy Pekka to bring to the table. And this is a Nashville team that, for all their warts last year and not having Pekka at all last year, because he was out for 50-some-odd games, and when he came back, he was not Pekka. He was clearly not 100%. He was clearly not he was not at the top of his game. So now, I mean, this is a team that you look at the Central Division. You've got, to me, two teams that have been what you'd they either overperformed or have been what you'd expect to be. Two teams, I think, that in the Central Division that can feel really good about the start of their season: Nashville and Minnesota. Minnesota's not a surprise at all. Minnesota is a team that was a puck possession monster last year. They've been so even more at the start of this season. Again, it's in some ways they've almost followed the Blackhawks model, where you build from within, and then when the time is right, you sort of strike with signing, a big free agent or a couple of big free agents. Obviously, in Chicago, Brian Campbell was that. They had overpaid again and eventually had to move him out, but he was one of those guys. And Marian Hossa obviously was and continues to be one of those guys in Chicago that you acquire those high-end free agents to put your team over the top after you develop well and draft well. We all know the big contracts that Zach Parise and Ryan Suter signed a couple years ago. They added the gambling man himself, Thomas Vanek, this past offseason, but you add they acquired Jason Pominville a couple of years ago, but you add that to the core of young guys that they've drafted and developed, like Jason Zucker, Charlie Coyle they acquired from San Jose, but Granlund, acquiring Nino Niederreiter for Cal Clutterbuck from the Islanders certainly does not look like that was a bad deal by any stretch of the imagination. You obviously have Mikko Koivu still there, and you've got young defensemen like Jared Spurgeon coming along. So it's a team that everything is sort of coming into place at the right time. Then you've got Darcy Kemper, who, outside of that absolute meltdown in Madison Square Garden last week, has been absolutely fantastic. Three shutouts already in eight starts, 1.62 goals against. He's been absolutely ridiculous. So, to me, though, you look specifically at the Central Division, those are the two teams that can be happy with where they're at. The Blues, 6-3-1, not a horrific start, but I mean, really, nobody outside of Jaden Schwartz and Vladimir Tarasenko are scoring. Paul Stastny should be coming back soon, and you would imagine that that would have a pretty big impact on them offensively, but there's some serious question marks there. And then you get to the Chicago Blackhawks, obviously the team that I follow more closely than any other, and it's been an interesting start to the season. Again, I know this is something that we will and have gotten into in some depth on the JewelCast that I'm guessing on as well. But, I mean, Chicago, to me, through the first 8 or 9 games, the first 9 games, I'd say I really was not overly concerned, really not concerned at all. You look at everything that points to a team playing well over the course of a long season, and they had it. A low goals against average, I think somewhere around, I believe it was somewhere around 1.5, 1.6 goals against for the first 8 or 9 games of the season. You're averaging right around 40 shots on goal a game. Every possession-based stat that you want to look at, whether it's Corsi Close, obviously the Fenwick stats, or if Bobby Ryan would say the Corsicas, the Blackhawks were one or two in every category except for goals for. Obviously, have just not been coming for them plentifully. I actually sort of tried to take a deeper look late last week at shooting percentage, because there's an argument going on a lot of the Blackhawks discussion forums, fan boards, whatever, that it's the same sort of tripe that, oh, we got to hit somebody, we're not big enough, the same things that everybody said in 2013, and they managed to win a Stanley Cup and have a pretty ridiculous 48 game regular season as well. And these shooting percentages have not changed much. If anything, they've gotten even worse since I took a look at this. But as of a couple games ago, just listen to these numbers. Patrick Sharp, 7.9 shooting percentage. Kane, 11.1. Taves, 8.0. Hossa, 3.6. You look at the career shooting percentages for all those guys. Sharp, 11.8. Kane, 11.6. Taves, 14.9. And Hossa, 12.7. So the only one of those guys that was shooting anywhere near their career shooting percentage was Kane. Really only a half percentage off, where you look at then the most glaring being Hossa, career 12.7, this year only at 3.6, and then Taves and Sharp also pretty serious drop-offs as well. And that really, to me, it speaks to something that we haven't seen really over this run of 5, 6, 7 years in Chicago, where all the top guys. The big four have gone cold. I really have no problem with the way Sharp, Hossa, and Taves have played. Kane, to me, is the one that his game is clearly not there, and I think, again, that's borne out by the shooting percentage. The shooting percentage is not much worse than it usually is. It's just a matter of his overall gameplay has not been there. He's not creating plays. He's not developing plays. Usually with him, there's about, I don't know, maybe 10 is too strong, maybe 6, 7, 8 games a year where he just looks off throughout, scattered throughout the year, where it's his game is such a precision game. There's so many intricacies to it, you know, slowing the game down, the vision, the passing. There's usually a handful of games throughout the year where it's just clear from the start of the game he just doesn't have the things that he does that usually work just aren't working. Instead, we've basically had the majority of the season so far, we've had that scattering, that smattering of games have all come, you know, in a big glob right at the start of the season. So it'll be interesting to see if and when he turns that around. Part of the problem in Chicago, obviously, is the revolving door of line mates. It works at times, but I think we're reaching the point where guys just have no idea who they're playing with, and it's a problem. The other main issue is usually when a couple of the big four aren't producing, you end up seeing some of the supporting cast really stepping up, whereas this year, we just haven't seen it. I mean, Versteeg's had his moments and has looked better the last few games in particular. Brad Richards, after a really slow start, at least offensively, has looked more like the higher end of what you'd expect Brad Richards to be able to do, as far as what his capabilities are. But two guys in particular, Brandon Saad and Brian Bickell. Brandon Saad in particular has just been, unfortunately, not good, which is crazy coming out of that Western Conference final where that line with Saad, Shaw, and Kane took over three of the games toward the end of the series against the Kings and really looked like that was going to be a line to contend with going into the season. And Saad looked like he was really ready to break out, be a legit high-end power forward, maybe a 25-30 goal scorer, maybe even eclipse that. This is obviously a big year for him. It's the last year of his entry-level deal, and you wonder where that's going to go, particularly when you look at, you know, at deals like guys like Ryan Johansson got. He's clearly not tracking or trending towards the contract anywhere near what a guy like Ryan Johansson got, because it's not happened for him. He has not really played the power forward game. He's got unbelievable speed. He's almost always able to bring the puck in, but he's not driving the net. Or if he does, he drives the net and then just makes a bizarre drop pass, you know, 8, 10 feet from the net that just makes no sense. There's no one there. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out throughout the season. He's through 11 games. He'd played on all four lines. He's played the last three games on the fourth line with Marcus Kruger and Ben Smith, and they've had their moments. And Kruger and Smith in particular have played really well, but Saad still hasn't been able to get it going. So it'll be interesting. Quenneville's not afraid to scratch either of those players. Both Brian Bickell and Brandon Saad were healthy scratched at points last year. So one would think that for one, if not both of those players, that the potential of them being a healthy scratch is not too far off, especially when you look at the way the Rockford IceHogs, the Blackhawks' main affiliate, have been playing. They're leading their division. They've got quite a few guys. And Teravainen's playing well, but I still don't think he'll be getting called up until there's a permanent spot for him. But there's several guys, Mark McNeil chief among them, that I think would be first in line for a call up if Quenneville wants to send a message and healthy scratch one of Saad or Bickell. So that's the Central Division in depth. That wasn't necessarily my plan to talk too much to go that in depth on the Central Division. But beyond that, it's pretty obvious that the biggest surprise team in the league is the Calgary Flames. Getting tremendous goaltending from Jonas Hiller and even to a lesser extent Kari Ramo. And really, I think the thing that when people are saying, "Oh, well, how could Edmonton be so bad?" And granted, they've been a little bit better this year, particularly the last couple of weeks. But how can Edmonton be so bad for so long, and yet you've got a team like Calgary, who even though they didn't win a ton of games last year, they were a competitive team that gave teams some scares last year. And then you look at this year, they're in a playoff spot, 7-4-2 after 13 games, plus 8 goal differential. To me, the thing that separates them from some of the other quote unquote bad teams that they're expected to be around, whether it be Edmonton, Carolina, Buffalo, obviously, is that Calgary has a legit number one defense pair. Mark Giordano and TJ Brody are not, they're not flashes in the pan. They're not flukes. Giordano's proven it over several years, really, since he came back from the KHL. And TJ Brody's proven it as well, and recently gotten rewarded pretty well for that with a new long-term contract. So I don't know that Calgary's for real in the sense that they're going to stay in a playoff spot, but they clearly they have the components to be able to win games, sometimes win games even when you aren't offensively the better team. And that, you know, that being, again, a very good goaltender who's playing maybe even a little bit over his head right now, but should be pretty solid throughout the year in Jonas Hiller. And that top D pair that drives things in a way that most of the other expected bad teams in the league just do not have. So interesting to track that and watch where that goes. Vancouver Canucks, another fascinating team. I think the short form there is just pretty clearly, and again, not a shock that you get John Tortorella out of there, and all of a sudden the guys that had played a particular way and had been very productive under Lane Vigneault for many years, most notably the Sedins, and obviously bringing in their new line mate Radim Vrbata has helped. But the guys you'd expect to be good in Vancouver are good again, and Willie Desjardins done a very good job, and I think it's as much as him, I think it's the not John Tortorella effect that's in place there. Quickly in the Eastern Conference, I don't know that there's as many surprises in the Eastern Conference. Carolina's terrible. I don't think anybody expected otherwise. Columbus, I mean, to me, for them to even be 4-7-0, just considering the ridiculous amount of injuries to absolute high, you know, for them, high-end top players, whether it be on the back line or up front. And Ryan Johansson sort of defying all logic by having a great start to the year after the contract situation that kept him out of training camp. You just usually don't see that, a guy miss training camp and play as well as he has. So it's not overly shocking that they're where they are, given the injury situation. Again, we talked about New Jersey in the season preview show, and that was another team that I had mentioned as being the kind of being the reverse, the opposite, the inverse, whatever you want to say, of Colorado, and that you look at everything they did last year. You look at how low their goals against was when Corey Schneider was in net, and obviously he's getting more starts this year than he did last year. You look at their possession numbers, which were much higher than a team finishing that far normally is, finishing that far down, I should say. And then you look at the just shockingly horrible record they had in shootouts last year. And you sort of mix that all into the stew that is the Metropolitan Division, it didn't seem unreasonable that the New Jersey Devils could take a pretty significant step forward. And they've done that, 6-3-2 through 11 games, only 1 point behind the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Pittsburgh's just doing what they do, having a good regular season. They certainly, to me, structurally seem to be a little bit better than they were last year, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out with the new coach, Mike Johnson, as they get closer to the playoffs. But and the Islanders, great start, kind of flagged a little bit. Yaroslav Halak has not been the goalie I think a lot of us expect him to be, but it's early yet. But the Metro is kind of the Metro. Eastern Conference, Atlantic Division, no shock to me who's on top with Tampa Bay Lightning. To me, they've been far and away the best team in that division. Identical records to with Montreal, but you look at some of the underlying numbers, whether it's possession numbers or even more simply just goals for. Tampa Bay, plus 10 goal differential, whereas Montreal, same record as Tampa Bay, but minus 4 goal differential. Granted, that 6-0 loss to Calgary on Sunday night played a significant role in that, but there's a lot of things in Montreal's game that, you know, the inability to score a first goal, that relying on the late game comeback, relying on Carey Price's heroics, that there are just things that point to taking a bit of a tumble. I don't think that I think they're overall a better team. It's weird because I think they're a better team than their overall play has indicated at the start of the season, but I think their record is right where the talent level would have you think they'd be at. It's just the way they've gotten there is not the way you would have expected. So Outside of that, I guess one of the bigger surprises really would be Detroit. They're a little bit healthier to start the year, and a lot of people, myself included, thought this might be the season that the Detroit Red Wings took a significant step back and finally missed the playoffs. We're only about one-eighth of the way through the season, but it doesn't seem to be the case there. And you kind of go on down the line. Boston, tons of injuries, but I think it's deeper than that. I think losing Boychuk hurt immensely, not surprisingly. Chara injured is a massive problem, but Chara, I still contend, is not the Chara of a couple of years ago. And maybe you wouldn't have seen that at the start of the year, but we've pretty clearly seen that the last couple of seasons, as those years have worn on into the playoffs, that he's running out of gas, it seems, a little bit earlier and earlier. And I hate to go back to the Tyler Seguin trade. Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn are tearing it up for Dallas, another great story in the Central Division. But I think as the years are not going to be kind to that trade, and to the reasons behind making that decision. Outside of that, really, you got Toronto is really kind of where you'd expect, right in the middle. Ottawa's been fine record-wise, but I expect that to crater. You look at the shots they're giving up every game, and to me, it's very similar in some ways to Toronto last year. And then outside of that, you got Florida, who's just not interested in playing a lot of games. The schedule maker has given them a very easy schedule as far as days in between games. They've only played nine as of the evening of this recording, and 4-2-3, not horrifically bad given what you'd expect out of them. And you got Buffalo, who've won a few games lately, but still 16 goals through 13 games. I think it's pretty safe to say that probably the game generating the most excitement at the Niagara Center will have been the Erie Otters game a couple of weeks ago featuring Connor McDavid rather than the current Buffalo Sabres. So that I think Buffalo is what they are what they are, and they can pay it a little bit of lip service, but it's pretty obvious what the goal for the season is, and on ice success is not the goal. So that being said, I guess that was a little bit of a tour around the league. Otherwise, things to note, the Champions Hockey League, which I've been talking about quite a bit this late summer into the fall, on Twitter, and then obviously in the season preview show, the 1/8 finals, as they call it, the first round of the playoffs begin tomorrow, Tuesday, November 4th, and it's a little bit different, particularly if you're not somebody that follows a lot of international sports, in the sense that they're two-game series, if you can call it that, played November 4th and November 11th in this round, and basically, the series is decided by overall goal differential. Obviously, a team that wins the first game wins that game, and then you go into the second game, and it's going to take a pretty big win. If you're the team that lost the first game, to be able to come back. Obviously, if it's a one goal win the other way, in the first game, then the other team comes back and wins by one. Then that will be the only situation in which you'll go into a shootout. Otherwise, all the games in the first game day, November 4th, those games can end in a tie. But that's all a long-winded way of saying if you have access to this, and there is access, in North America, if you have access to One World Sports, which I know they're carried on a few cable companies, you can also get them through the IPTV platform Dish World, which is not actual satellite dish, but it's run by that company. You can get One World Sports through their sports package on there for, I think, $10 a month. But you can watch those games live and archived on there. And then the Champions League, usually, at least in the league, the round robin league portion, earlier this summer and into the early fall, they got the highlights with English language announcing up pretty quickly. So that's definitely something to check out. Again, it's sort of, you had the 44 of the best teams throughout all the non-KHL European leagues, Swedish Hockey League, Finnish League, Swiss League, Austrian League, even a couple of teams from England, a couple of teams from the DEL, all involved. That has sort of been funneled down now to the top 16 teams out of that large grouping, and They will be going at it. You've got a playoff round in November, one in December, one in January, and then I believe it's February 3rd, the one-game winner-take-all championship game. So that's definitely something to keep your eye on. And then the KHL as well, which is also on One World Sports, a couple games a week, basically two games of the week there. But just quickly, if you want to boil the season down to one thing in the KHL, it's all about SKA St. Petersburg. That, of course, is the team that employs Ilya Kovalchuk. Not only Ilya Kovalchuk, though, quite a few noteworthy players on this team, quite a few NHL experienced players, and guys who have sort of been cherry-picked from other, as the top players in other KHL teams. But you've got Alexei Panikoroski, for example, is on this team. Anton Belov, who I know some people will snicker because he was not a great success for the Edmonton Oilers last year, but he is a fantastic player in the KHL style. And then you've got guys, a guy like Artemi Panarin as well, who not very familiar to strictly NHL fans, but he's been fantastic, and he's near the scoring lead. So SKA St. Petersburg had an unbelievable start through the first 21 games. They only had one loss. Even now, they are 21 with 21 wins, one overtime win, one shootout loss, and one overtime loss, and one regular loss. The stat line, the team's stat line for the KHL is a little bit more intricate than it is with the NHL, but fact of the matter remains, they're the class of the Western Conference. CSKA, Central Red Army, whatever you want to call them, they've also had a very strong start to the season. They've tailed off a little bit in the last few weeks. They've got four losses now, but that, of course, is the Alex Radulov led team. He is absolutely insane. He's every bit as crazy as you remember him. Swung his stick at a penalty box attendant a few weeks ago, just as one example, but he's one of the leading players. Stefan DaCosta, formerly of the Ottawa Senators, the Frenchman, he's playing on the line with Alex Radulov. That has been one of the top lines in the league. Other teams, Jokerit, one of the former top teams from the Finnish league, they've had a very good start to the year as well. So really, it's the in some ways it's very similar to the NHL, where the Western Conference is the king, and really to me the only team out of the Eastern Conference, Metallurg Magnitogorsk, which is the team coached by Mike Keenan. It's the team that Evgeny Malkin played for during the lockout, and probably the, I think you can make the argument, in the seven-year history of the KHL, the best player in the history of the KHL, Sergei Mazyakin, is the star scorer for Metallurg. But that's probably the only team in the East that can compete with the top three in the West. So that's the KHL update, such as it is. And I think with that, before I get too far out of my self-imposed time limit, I'm going to close this down. But if you do get a chance, check out the show again that I, on Monday night, I'm recording with the guys over at the Jewelcast, the Jewels from the Crown blog. And make sure, again, I would imagine the next week or two at the latest, we'll be back with another edition of the Breakout Hockey program. So with that, I'm going to wrap it up. Again, if you want to ask a question or anything along those lines for next week's episode, feel free to do so at Adam_Summers. Or if you are an email user still in 2014, or 2014 as I guess I should say, send an email to breakouthockey@radiostar.com. So thanks for listening. Enjoy the hockey. Try to step out of your comfort zone and check out some international hockey. And as always, keep it simple.